Hello, I'm Scott Cullen, and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Hockey Podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Today's episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. Rock Auto has amazing selection for just about any kind of vehicle at reliably low prices. They have all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com. In today's episode, we're going to look back at the Stanley Cup Final. The Tampa Bay Lightning win it in five games over the Montreal Canadiens. Not a huge surprise, and having said that, it's not as though Montreal played poorly. They, even in game five, if you get it down to a grinded out game, and maybe Tampa Bay plays that game really well, that's fine, but it still gives Montreal a fighting chance that, you know, a favorable bounce, a timely goal, could have tied that game. And so, yes, Montreal would have been nice to see them generate more offense, in the series in general, but especially in game five. And it ended up, Montreal was outshot 30-22. The only goal of the game goes to Lightning rookie Ross Colton, a rookie who played at the University of Vermont and had moved up on the depth chart to play in Alex Killorn's spot alongside Anthony Cirelli and Steven Stamkos. Killorn, who's been a very valuable contributor to the Lightning's back-to-back Stanley Cup runs, suffered a fractured fibula in game one of the Cup Final. And as forthcoming as they are about injuries in the NHL, they were always talking, well, we'll see, he's getting better, maybe there's a chance. I'm like, goodness gracious, there's no reason that Alex Killorn should be playing on a fractured fibula in the final. So obviously congratulations in order to the Lightning. They were, you know, very heavily favored coming into the final. They were very clearly the better team. In game five, Carey Price stopped 29 of 30 shots for Montreal. He had an .888 save percentage in the final. He struggled really in the first three games. Played much more Carey Price-like in games four and five, and finished the playoffs with a .924 save percentage. And Price has been a very solid playoff goaltender in his last three postseasons, and then in three of the past four regular seasons, he's been below average. And so I still don't know that I would look at Carey Price's performance in this year's playoffs and suddenly assume that Montreal's goaltending is going to be A1 during the regular season next year. For Tampa Bay, Andrei Vasilevskiy stopped all 22 shots, and he had a .943 save percentage in the final, which is fantastic, and .937 save percentage in the playoffs overall. Nikita Kucherov, in his rather infamous post-game interview, was going on and on about how great Vasilevskiy was and how he deserved to be the MVP. And that's nice of Kucherov to say as a teammate. At the same time, the Tampa Bay defense had really tightened things down on Montreal. I mean, he stopped 22 shots for a shutout. He had a couple other games with fewer than 20 saves in the final. And so, as well as Vasilevskiy played on the whole in the playoffs, it's not as though he was tested that much in the final. And that's, you know, what you get when you have a Tampa Bay team that can really play lockdown defense against a Montreal team that has trouble creating offense. And so that .937 save percentage in the playoffs for Vasilevskiy, there have been five goaltenders who have played more than 20 games in the playoffs and finished with a higher save percentage. And that's 2013, Tuukka Rask was at .940. 2011, Tim Thomas, both Bruins, he's at .940. 1998, Olaf Kolzig with the Washington Capitals had .941. And 2003, Anaheim's Jean-Sébastien Giguère was .945, famously winning the Conn Smythe as part of a losing team. And in 2012, the Kings' Jonathan Quick was .946. And so it was a great playoff for Andrei Vasilevskiy, but really it was a great playoff for the Lightning just generally. When it comes to Game 5, Ryan McDonagh led the Lightning in Corsi, which is kind of funny because that wasn't a real strong suit of his for the postseason, but he was 65.2% in Game 5. At the other end of the spectrum there for Tampa Bay, Anthony Cirelli was 28.6%, Victor Hedman, 37.9%. For Montreal, Jake Evans, 66.7%, Cole Caufield, 61.5%, and then who's on the wrong end for Montreal? Kind of the last guys they would want on the wrong end. Brendan Gallagher, 27.8%, Tyler Toffoli, 29.4%. Those are guys who are used to pinning the puck in the other team's end and causing problems. But that was the tables were turned on Gallagher and Toffoli. Now, for the series, Eric Gustafson had the best Corsi for Montreal. He only played three games on defense and very sheltered, but had a 68.5% Corsi. And then the depth forwards, Eric Staal, 67.4%, Joel Armia, 63.2%, Jake Evans, 60.9%, Corey Perry, 60.6%. So, you know, Montreal could control the play. Problem was they were controlling the play when it was their fourth line out there. And then at the other end of the spectrum in the series is that Joel Edmondson was at 41%. Anthony Cirelli for Tampa Bay was at 41.7%. And Philip Deneau, 42.2%. And in the series, Ryan McDonough was on the ice for 10 goals for and 3 goals against. And there had been some talk heading into Game 5 about how McDonough had been super valuable. And I sort of noted on Twitter that I think a lot of that is coming from goal differentials, that McDonough, his going into Game 5, his Corsi and expected goals against were the worst among Tampa Bay defensemen, but his goal differential was the best. And that can be something that kind of, falls under the eye test people, is that they note who's on and off for goals. And not necessarily what leads to goals and what have you. So McDonough was obviously a big part of the Lightning's Stanley Cup runs, but it is worth noting that he was spending more time in his own end. Eric Chernak for Tampa Bay, 7 goals, 4, 2 goals against in the final. Tyler Johnson, 5 goals, 4, and 1 goal against for the Lightning. And then in Montreal, on the wrong side of things, Ben Chiarot, 2 goals, 4, 7 against in the series. Jeff Petrie, 3 goals, 4, 7 against. Tyler Toffoli, 1 goal, 4, 6 goals against. The leading scorer of the series was Nikita Kucherov, 3 goals, 2 assists, and 20 shots on goal in 5 games. But the key here for Tampa Bay is they had depth of scoring. Tyler Johnson and Blake Coleman, 2 goals and 2 assists. Andre Palat and Barclay Goodrow each had a goal and 3 assists. And so that was, not only does Tampa Bay have the advantage of having kind of higher ceiling guys at the top of the depth chart, but they also got more from guys further down the depth chart. So this is how you end up with a mismatch in the final. And in Montreal's case, Tyler Toffoli, Eric Staal, Joel Armia, Arturi Lehkonen, Paul Byron, all of them combined for 0 points. So it's one thing to have some fourth liners not contribute for you offensively, but Toffoli, who was Montreal's best player during the regular season and best player probably through the first three rounds of the playoffs, or at least best skater, coming up empty in the final is that's going to be a tough one for Montreal to overcome. They depended a lot on Tyler Toffoli this year. So, you if you're Montreal and you finished where you finished this season, you were 18th in the standings. You don't have much right to be upset about how this went. The Lightning were a great team, and they would have been if they had gone up against teams that had stronger records during the season. Colorado, Vegas, Tampa Bay was right there with those teams, especially once they've added Kucherov. And so if you're Montreal, yes, it's disappointing to have come this far, but goodness, you finished 18th during the regular season. There was nothing that indicated this team was really built to win a Stanley Cup. And so it's a fortunate run, and they should be happy about it. But I also, you should be wary about placing super high expectations on them for next season. And when we come back, we will look at Stanley Cup favorites for next season, and then dig into some more draft reviews. In this episode, we're going to look at the Buffalo Sabres, Calgary Flames, and Carolina Hurricanes. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing. You can track all the action at BetOnline. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs. And now that the Stanley Cup has been awarded, there's still Major League Baseball, the NBA is in their finals, and UFC MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. This is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website, betonline.ag, or use your mobile device. Sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Use promo code LOCKEDON at BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. So now the 2021 Stanley Cup has been awarded. Who are the favorites for 2022? And top two are the Colorado Avalanche at plus 500 on betonline.ag and the Vegas Golden Knights plus 600 at betonline.ag. And you might say, goodness, how are the Tampa Bay Lightning at plus 700? Why are they third? And I think the answer is that when the NHL goes back to its normal divisions next year, and that is the plan, that the Lightning are going to be in a difficult division. As much as they might be the best team in that division, the Boston Bruins and Toronto Maple Leafs and Florida Panthers are all viable challengers. And the Montreal Canadiens are in that division too. And that might pose a bit more of a problem for the Montreal Canadiens than it does for the Tampa Bay Lightning. But nevertheless, Colorado and Vegas don't have as much of a challenge waiting for them in their divisions, because in the Central, I mean, Colorado, there's St. Louis and Dallas and Winnipeg and Nashville and Minnesota and Chicago. Well, none of those, I mean, there are teams there that will be playoff teams naturally, but none of those other teams are real heavy Stanley Cup contenders, so Colorado is clearly the favorite there. And in the Pacific, the Golden Knights, they're looking at a bunch of teams that are sort of in the midst of rebuilding and trying to kind of get back to being competitive. And so in addition to the Golden Knights, they have the Edmonton Oilers, and then Calgary Flames, Vancouver Canucks, Arizona Coyotes, Anaheim Ducks, LA Kings, San Jose Sharks. I mean, surely some of those teams are going to be improved next year, but the Golden Knights are starting out with a real leg up. So that's how the Avalanche and Golden Knights end up with lower odds than Tampa Bay, because it at least right now, it sure looks like their path will be easier. Some other teams among the favorites: Carolina Hurricanes are plus 1,100, Boston Bruins plus 1,400, Toronto Maple Leafs plus 1,400. So there's your top six. And then Montreal, who just finished their surprise run to the final, they're tied for eighth with the New York Islanders. Both teams are 20-1. And so that doesn't seem like great value for Montreal. That there might be some recency bias affecting those odds, because I think if you're taking a clear-eyed approach to it, you would not want Montreal at that price. Then at the bottom end of the scale, we've got six teams who are all tied for the worst odds on betonline.ag. That's plus 10,000, so 100-1. That includes the expansion Seattle Kraken, New Jersey Devils, Detroit Red Wings, Buffalo Sabres, Columbus Blue Jackets, and Anaheim Ducks. Well, I mean, not that it matters much, but I would hazard a guess that those are decent odds for the Seattle Kraken. Any of these teams who are at the very bottom are very unlikely to win next season, but knowing that Seattle has intelligent people working in their front office, they could build a team that makes the playoffs next year. I just mentioned what is sitting out there in that Pacific Division, and you add the Kraken into that mix, and could they come in ahead of the Ducks and Kings and Sharks and the Flames and Canucks? Well, possibly. We don't even know who's going to be on that team. But if you think the Seattle Kraken can put together a competent roster, that might be all it takes. Maybe depending on who they have and what's happening, maybe the Seattle Kraken at 100-1 is worth considering. Of the teams that are sort of middle of the pack or might offer some value, I do look at the New York Rangers at 28-1 and think, there's a path there. I mean, it's not an easy one, because their division has, contending teams in it, whether it's the Capitals, the Penguins, the Hurricanes, Islanders. Well, if those four teams all make the playoffs, then it gets really tough for the Rangers even to make the postseason. But if they could come out ahead of the Islanders, if the Penguins or Capitals start to get old, then maybe there's a path here, because the Rangers do look like they have a bright future. And I think with the hiring of Gerard Gallant, they're going to be playing to win, and at least at 28-1, that's not a bad value proposition. So let's begin our draft histories with the Buffalo Sabres, and we did three teams on the last podcast, and then we'll just kind of continue on as we head towards the NHL draft and have a look at you know. As we go through this history, I'm starting with each team in 2005, and you see over the past 15 years kind of how things either trended in the right direction or the wrong direction, often through the draft. And so in 2005, the Buffalo Sabres took Marek Zagrapan with the 13th overall pick, and he was one of three first-rounders that year that never appeared in an NHL game, so that's a big miss. Now, they did get some value later in the draft. They got defenseman Chris Butler and winger Nathan Gerby in the fourth and fifth round. Now, neither one's been an impact player in the NHL, but they have actually had NHL careers. And as I've mentioned before, obviously the ideal is that you hit on your first round pick because those guys have the highest ceiling. But in addition to your first round pick, you also need to get some value later in the draft. And if it means that you get a couple of guys who are fourth liners, then that's better than getting nothing. And so that, at least in the 2005 draft, Buffalo missed on their first rounder, did get a couple of guys later who at least played in the league. In 2006, they used the 24th pick on defenseman Dennis Persson, who was one pick ahead of his junior teammate Patrick Berglund, who had a much better NHL career. And then later in the draft, they got goaltender Jonas Enroth, defenseman Mike Weber, defenseman Alex Biega. Now, again, none of those guys are impact players, but they had NHL careers. 2007, Sabres had no first-round pick. Did draft Paul Byron in the sixth round. Now, Byron's greatest career success came well after he was property of the Buffalo Sabres. Calgary Flames and Montreal Canadiens saw a lot more of Byron's success, but part of the point here of doing the draft history is to see which teams are identifying talent, and that talent may not always manifest itself for the team that drafts them, but they're also an asset to be used too. In 2008, the Sabres used the 12th pick on Tyler Myers. And you can look at that and say, oh, but Erik Karlsson went three picks later. True, but defenseman Colton Teubert went one pick later. And so the automatic thing, if you had passed on Tyler Myers, it might not have been to take Karlsson. Teubert could have been the one, and that would leave you with a whole other level of regret. The 26th pick they used on Tyler Ennis, and he's turned into a pretty nice NHL player, was Buffalo's leading scorer during some pretty lean years. In 2009, Sabres used the 13th pick on Zach Cassian, and they really focused on the Bruisers in 2009. They got Cassian with the 13th pick. In the third round, grabbed defenseman Braden McNabb. In the fourth round, grabbed winger Marcus Foligno. And so all three of those guys have had long NHL careers. You might complain about the ceiling, as though Cassian, probably hasn't given huge value on the 13th pick. You might like a guy who can score a little bit more, but there has been a place for Zach Cassian in the league nonetheless. In 2010, the Sabres used the 23rd pick on defenseman Mark Pesek, who has had an NHL career, maybe hasn't been a real impact player. He had kind of a few years at his best where he put up some solid numbers, particularly in terms of possession relative to his teammates. But overall, with 23rd overall pick, you have sort of modest expectations. And I think Pesek has probably exceeded whatever those modest expectations would be. 2011, the Sabres used the 16th pick on Joel Armia. And now he didn't do anything for the Sabres, but he got traded to Winnipeg and then to Montreal, where he's kind of carved out a useful role as a National Hockey League winger. But as you see in 2010, 2011, you're not getting any further value out of the draft for Buffalo. No depth players. And then in 2012, The Sabres have the 12th pick, and they use it on Mikhail Grigorenko. The 14th pick on Zemgus Girgensons. The 13th pick, who went in between them, was Radek Faksa. Given the choice, Faksa would probably be the preferable option. And then in picks 15 to 20, so who went after both of those Sabres, there's Cody Ceci, Tom Wilson, Thomas Hertl, Teuvo Teravainen, Andrei Vasilevskiy, Scott Laughton. You might want better out of the 12th and 14th pick when those guys were still on the board. Now, Buffalo still got value. Second round, they got Jake McCabe, the defenseman. Sixth round, they got Linus Ullmark, the goaltender. And so some misses there in 2012, but they were offset a little bit at least by value later in the draft. 2013, the Sabres used the 8th pick on Rasmus Ristolainen. The next three picks were Bo Horvat, Valeri Nichushkin, and Samuel Morin. You probably would like Horvat ahead of Ristolainen, maybe Nichushkin, but Ristolainen would be preferable to Morin. And then in the 16th pick, the Sabres stay on the blue line, get Nikita Zadorov. Now, you know, the later in the draft, there's not as much regret coming. I mean, even with the 16th pick. So the next four picks were Curtis Lazar, Mirko Mueller, Kirby Reichel, and Anthony Mantha. Now, yes, would you prefer Anthony Mantha? Of course. But some question marks between Zadorov and Mantha. The second round pick, though, Buffalo drafted JT Compher, who has carved out a nice career with Colorado Avalanche. And with a fifth round pick, they drafted goaltender Cal Peterson. Now, Peterson didn't sign with the Sabres coming out of Notre Dame and ended up with the LA Kings, but it looks like he's the Kings' starting goaltender at this stage. So, you know, maybe you have to wait a while to hit on that, but there is some value coming out of that 2013 draft for Buffalo. 2014, they have the second overall pick and use it on Sam Reinhart, who's been a productive player for the Sabres and now might be on his way out the door. A second round pick on winger Brendan Lemieux, a seventh round pick on winger Victor Olofsson, and also a third round pick on goaltender Jonas Johansson, who hadn't played a whole lot for Buffalo before ending up in Colorado this year, and is probably still trying to secure a regular spot in the league. But if you look at that draft and took Reinhart, Lemieux, and Olofsson, that's pretty solid value coming out of one draft. In 2015, well, the second overall pick was Jack Eichel, who has been a very good player, but is also seems to be on his way out the door in Buffalo as they kind of dispute about how to deal with his injured neck. 2016, the eighth overall pick was used on Alex Nylander. The next picks after Nylander, Mikhail Sergachev, Tyson Jost, Logan Brown, Mike McLeod. So Sergachev certainly would have been a preferable option. The next three forwards there are still fairly bubble-ish in their part. Like, yes, the Jost has been better than Nylander, but not by a ton. Second round pick that year was Rasmus Asplund, who got into the lineup this season a little bit. Could be a prime candidate for Seattle in the expansion draft. And also in 2016, the Sabres drafted Brandon Hagel in the sixth round. And while he did nothing for Buffalo, he did crack the Chicago Blackhawks lineup this year. You know, was a respectable NHL forward. So there is some value to be found in that. And then in 2017, well, the eighth overall pick was Casey Mittelstadt. And that is a bit of a disappointment. But at the same time, it's not as though passing over Mittelstadt would have automatically given the Sabres what they wanted. I mean, the next pick was Michael Rasmussen, and then Owen Tippett, and then Gabe Vilardi. Now, after that, you know, Martin Nichas and Nick Suzuki, those ones would have been preferable. But, you know, we'll give Mittelstadt a chance here because he did show some progress this past season that maybe he can, you know, turn this around. I don't think he's going to live up to his hype, but he doesn't necessarily have to live up to his hype. He can just be a solid NHL player, and that would be something. In 2018, the Sabres with the first overall pick take defenseman Rasmus Dahlin. The next three picks, Andrei Svechnikov, Jesperi Kotkaniemi, and Brady Tkachuk. Well, I would hazard a guess that Svechnikov and Tkachuk would be preferable options right now. But let's see what Dahlin does with a new coaching staff, because obviously things weren't going great with Ralph Kruger there. And I think, you know, if the Sabres are going to maximize Dahlin's value, you need a coach that is going to turn him loose and let him be a playmaker. And we'll see whether or not Don Granato can bring that out of Dahlin. There were some signs this year after Granato took over that might still be possible. In 2019, Sabres took Dylan Cousins with the 7th overall pick. He had dealt with some injuries as a rookie this year, but also showed some promise. And so I think there's some reason to be encouraged about that. And then in 2020, the Sabres used the 8th overall pick for Jack Quinn. And now it's much too soon to go passing judgment on that pick. But the next ones in line after that were Marco Rossi, Cole Perfetti, Yaroslav Askarov, the goaltender, Anton Lundell, Seth Jarvis. And so that's going to be, I guess, a challenge for Quinn if he's going to, live up to expectations. You're going to see the guys who are drafted after him and see whether or not Quinn outproduces them. So you go through this this list and you see there are some hits here for Buffalo. But when you start missing, particularly early, then things can run into trouble. And when you take, 2016, the 8th pick is Alex Nylander, and the 8th pick the next year is Casey Mittelstadt. And then your first overall pick in 2018, Rasmus Dahlin, who started great as a rookie, but, his game had sort of declined by his third season. Well, it's no real mystery how the Sabres end up where they are right now. When we come back, we will pick up with the Calgary Flames and Carolina Hurricanes. This episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning? Is your Odyssey an LX or an EX? And wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer. You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Save time and money when using Rock Auto. Why choose to spend 30%, 50%, even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or car dealership? For example, a Honda Odyssey fuel pump, $353 from a chain store. On Rock Auto, it's $216. That's more money in your pocket. Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. And Rock Auto prices are reliably low for every customer. They have everything you could need, brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpet. Go explore their easy-to-use website today. Find the solution to your auto parts needs. Go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com. Okay, let's continue our draft history with the Calgary Flames. In 2005, the Flames used the 26th pick on Matt Pelech, older brother of Islanders defenseman Adam Pelech. Pelech's NHL career did not exactly blossom. The next forwards that were taken in the draft, Steve Downey, James Neal, Ryan Stoa. When you get to late first round, sometimes it's a hit or miss proposition. It's not quite as a sure thing. In 2006, the Flames were picking 26th again. They grabbed goaltender Leland Irving. Michael Neuwirth was the next goalie to go in the draft. Nick Foligno ended up getting picked 28th. Obviously the Flames were hoping that Leland Irving was going to be their goaltender of the future, and he was really their goaltender of the never. In 2007, with the 24th pick, the Flames take Michael Backlund. Well, at least that one hit. Backlund's been a very reliable two-way center for the Flames for a long time. 2008, with the 25th pick, they took Greg Nemes. And the next three picks were Tyler Ennis, John Carlson, and Victor Tikhonov. There was some value left on the board there by the Flames. 2009, they used the 23rd pick on defenseman Tim Erickson. And Marcus Johansson, Kyle Palmieri, and Jordan Caron were the next three. So certainly Johansson or Palmieri would have offered quite a bit more value there. In 2010, the Flames had no picks in the first two rounds, and yet they still came in with some value. They got Michael Ferland in the 5th round that year. So under those circumstances, that's a pretty good haul to come away with at least one NHL regular. In 2011, they had the 13th pick, using it on winger Sven Berchi. Now, he went at 13. At 14 was Jamie Oleksiak. At 15 was JT Miller, and at 16 was Yoel Armia. So in hindsight, at the very least, the Flames might have been able to get more value with one of those guys. However, in that same draft, the Flames grabbed Marcus Granlund in the second round, Johnny Gaudreau in the fourth round, and goaltender Laurent Brossoit in the sixth round. So it doesn't necessarily make up for taking Berchi ahead of, say, like JT Miller, who's had a pretty strong career. But, you know, Johnny Gaudreau in the fourth round, that's a real home run. In 2012, the Flames reached a bit with Mark Jankowski on the 21st pick. And I say reached only because Jankowski wasn't really projected to go that high. But, the next three picks were Olli Mäta, Mike Matheson, and Malcolm Subban. I mean, guys who have had NHL careers, but there isn't... some massive regret out of missing out on those guys. In the fourth round, Brett Kulak, the defenseman, was a nice value pickup there for the Flames. 2013, the Flames took Sean Monahan with the sixth overall pick. The next picks were Darnell Nurse, Rasmus Ristolainen, and Bo Horvat. Maybe you'd like Horvat in hindsight, but maybe you'd like Nurse in hindsight. But I think Monahan's, he's been productive enough to this point in his career that there's not too much regret about that. 2014, the Flames took Sam Bennett fourth overall. And, this has been an interesting one because Bennett basically never lived up to his expectations in Calgary and then went to Florida this year and suddenly played like a guy who was picked fourth overall. The next picks were Michael Dalcol and Jake Virtanen. And so, there's no great regret in missing out on those guys. But at 7 and 8, in that draft were William Nylander and Nikolai Ehlers, two star forwards who would have given the Flames a whole lot more than Sam Bennett. In 2015, the Flames had no first-round pick, still came away with three NHL players. In the second round, they got defenseman Rasmus Anderson and Oliver Shillington, and then in the sixth round, got winger Andrew Mangiapane. I mean, that's pretty solid work for a team without a first-round pick. In 2016, they used the sixth overall pick on Matthew Tkachuk, and... second round pick was on Dylan Dubé. Their third round pick, Adam Fox, a guy who won the Norris Trophy. Now, obviously, it stings a little bit that he won the Norris Trophy with the New York Rangers because he wasn't going to sign with Calgary coming out of Harvard. But that's a monster draft right there to get Matthew Tkachuk, Dylan Dubé, Adam Fox, all in the same draft. In 2017. The Flames used the 16th pick on defenseman Juuso Välimäki in the midst of a series of, there were five defensemen taken there in the middle of the first round, and all of them are still sort of questionable in terms of what they're going to provide in the National Hockey League. Cal Foote and Erik Brännström and Juuso Välimäki and Timothy Liljegren and Urho Vakanainen. And at this stage, 4 years later, I don't think we know whether any of them are going to be impact players in the NHL. 2018, the Flames had no picks in the first three rounds. tough to come away with real value out of that. 2019, their 26th pick was used on Jacob Pelletier. In 2020, they had the 24th pick on Connor Zeri. Now, Pelletier and Zeri are young, but they've been productive and look like quality prospects. You can see where the Flames in 2016, boy, if they had just managed to convince Adam Fox to come to Calgary, that would have been a franchise-altering draft right there. I mean, it's already a good one with Tkachuk and Dubé, but Adam Fox was kind of a super wild card there that would have shifted things in a big way. All right, before we go, let's do the Carolina Hurricanes to finish this off. Starting in 2005, and this is a fun one, third overall pick, they grabbed defenseman Jack Johnson. And for as maligned as Jack Johnson has been, he's also played 950 games in the National Hockey League. And yes, the Hurricanes, didn't last with Jack Johnson. They traded him away. And then he's bounced around, LA is where he really got his start in the league and had his longest stretch there. Ever since, there have been several teams who have been interested to find out, whether they could get the best results out of Jack Johnson. And so with the third overall pick, I think he probably qualifies as a disappointment. But at the same time, I mean, it's a disappointment who's played 950 games in the league. That's not, That's not nothing, to be sure. And so I guess in terms of the relative value, you would have to look at who comes next after Jack Johnson. And, you know, there are some hits and misses there. And it's Benoit Pouliot and Carey Price and Gilbert Brulé, Jack Skilly, Devin Setoguchi, Brian Lee, Luke Bourdon. That rounds out the top 10. Well, I mean, Carey Price is the one guy there that you would prefer to Jack Johnson. The others had a difficult time sticking in the league. Now, number 11 was Anže Kopitar, but you know, if you knew then what you know now, obviously Kopitar would go higher. But at the time, you know, there was still uncertainty about how great Anže Kopitar was going to be. So when you see the forwards who, or the players in general who get drafted next, it's not as though Johnson is an egregious third overall pick, but he did not offer a ton of value given how high he was selected. At 2006, Hurricanes had no first round pick, used their second round pick on defenseman Jamie McBain, who had a few hundred games in the league, but not a lot of extra value further down the board. In 2007, they drafted Brandon Sutter 11th overall, and then picked up Drayson Bowman, Chris Terry, Brett Bellamore. There's three guys who played more than 100 NHL games apiece later in that draft. In 2008, with the 14th pick, they drafted Zach Boychuk. The next three picks were Erik Karlsson, Joel Colburn, Jake Gardner. Well, it sure would be nice to have Erik Karlsson in that spot. They also grabbed Zach Dalpe in the second round there, so they did, you know, grab a guy who's played more than 100 NHL games, but there's a miss there in the first round. 2009, with the 27th pick, the Hurricanes grabbed Philippe Paradis, who did not play any NHL games, but in the second round they drafted Brian Dumoulin, who's, you know, been a key figure on a couple of Pittsburgh Penguins Stanley Cup teams. So that's nice value in the second round. In 2010, they used the 7th overall pick on Jeff Skinner. In the second round, they drafted defenseman Justin Falk. And then in the 7th round, they drafted goaltender Frederick Anderson, who they ultimately did not sign, and he was drafted again a couple years later by the Anaheim Ducks. But that's a pretty nice draft to pull, you know, a top four defenseman, a top scoring forward, and a starting goaltender all out of the same draft. 2011, they used the 12th pick on defenseman Ryan Murphy. Now, that one, we talked about Sven Berge. Well, he was the next pick, and then that means Jamie Oleksiak, JT Miller, Joel Armia, Nathan Beaulieu are the next five. Yes, they could have come up with something better than Ryan Murphy. The second round pick that year was Victor Rask, and, you know, as much as Rask has been maligned recently, he's played enough NHL games that's pretty good value in the second round. 2012, no first round pick, but the Hurricanes still grabbed some value. In the fourth round, they grabbed Jacob Slavin. You know, that's not bad. Grab a first pair defender. They also got wingers Phil DiGiuseppe and Brock McGinn. And so that's a pretty decent haul, again, for a team without a first round pick that year. 2013, they used the 5th overall pick on Elias Lindholm, and then a 3rd round pick on Brett Pesce. Again, that's, you know, as I've been talking about these things you want to hit on your first round pick and then get something else. Well, if you end up with kind of two top quality players out of a draft, that's a real home run of a draft. And that's the case when you end up with Lindholm and Pesce. 2014, the Hurricanes used the 7th overall pick on defenseman Hayden Fleury, who has been playing in the league but hasn't really made a huge impact. Goaltender Alex Nedeljkovic, who now looks like he's going to be the Hurricanes goaltender of the future, or even the present, after a strong season. And then they also got winger Warren Fogle and center Lucas Walmark. And so there's value to be had when you're, even if it's getting somebody like Lucas Walmark, a guy who's a fourth line center, it still helps if you're hitting on those with your later picks. In 2015, the Hurricanes used the 5th overall pick on Noah Hanifin, the defenseman, and then in the second round, hit it on Sebastian Aho. And then in the 4th round was Nicholas Waugh, who has been playing for Vegas. And the 7th round, they grabbed Steven Lorenz, who ended up playing some games for the Hurricanes this year. So again, we're starting to connect here on the Hurricanes getting real draft value in kind of 14, 15, I guess back to 2013, even in that range too. 2000, 16, the 13th overall pick on defenseman Jake Bean. Now, you know, Bean got into the Canes lineup this year and had some moments, but he went one pick ahead of Charlie McAvoy. So that one stings a little bit. And Luke Kunin and Jacob Chychrun were the next two picks after McAvoy. So if you were committed to a defenseman, getting McAvoy or Chychrun instead of Bean would have worked out. Then 21st, they took Julien Gauthier. And the funny thing is, as you go just that bit later in the draft, there's not a ton of regret for missing here. Like, you took Gauthier. The next picks were German Rutzoff, Henrik Borgstrom, Max Jones, Riley Tuft. Not impact players, any of them. And then in the second round, the Hurricanes got Jani Kukkonen, who has had some promise, I guess, in his stints with Carolina and then in New Jersey this year. And so, you know, I still think, you know, missing out on McAvoy or Chychrun instead of Jake Bean, there's a bit of a sting there. But again, the Hurricanes are getting multiple NHL players out of their drafts. 2017, they used the 12th overall pick on Martin Nichas, who continues to develop nicely. Second round pick was used on Etu Luostarinen, who's been playing in Florida. And third round pick was Morgan Geeky, who has cracked the Hurricanes lineup as a fourth line center. 2018, they used the second overall pick on Andrei Sveshnikov, who did not have as productive a season this year as I think might have been expected, but still has had a pretty good start to his NHL career and very promising. Then, in the past two seasons, 2019, they used the 28th pick on Ryan Suzuki, who you know, might be facing higher expectations now that his brother has already played in a Stanley Cup final. And in 2020, they used the 13th pick on Seth Jarvis, who, because junior age players couldn't get sent back to leagues that weren't playing, Jarvis got to start the year in the American Hockey League and tore it up. And so I think that probably elevated his status as a prospect, even if it was a small sample of games. He was really productive. But looking at that as a whole, you can understand why the Carolina Hurricanes are a successful team right now, and a team that is contending because they've been hitting on multiple picks in their drafts, from around 2013 forward. They've had really consistent value coming out of their drafts, and you know, we don't know out of 2018, 2019, 2020. It's too soon to know what kind of value they're getting out of those. There's something to be said about the foundation that gets built when you are getting these players in your draft. So there's the Carolina Hurricanes. We will continue now that we are heading into the off season. There will be more NHL draft histories and lots of preparation as we head towards the expansion draft and trades and free agency. It's going to be a fun time of year. So that'll do it for today. I hope you enjoyed this National Hockey League season, and we'll have some fun here in the off season as well. Also check out the Locked On Fantasy Baseball podcast. I've been doing a lot of mid-season recaps recently, and it's kind of been fun. Today we checked in on the biggest disappointments, sort of the fantasy baseball version of the Raspberries. And then find these podcasts, check them out on Apple, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts. Stay locked in with Locked On Fantasy Hockey, your daily source for fantasy news and analysis. Today on the Locked On Today podcast, what is the game plan for the Phoenix Suns in Game 2 against the Milwaukee Bucks? Get more of the sports news you need in less time with the Locked On Today podcast. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts.